Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3 for $10 on select Kellogg's Giant Size cereal with your card. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff, at beekeepingfornewbies.com, or you can go to beekeepingfornewbies.com. Go about halfway down on the left, and there's a link to the Discord room. Feel free to jump into the Discord and chat with us over there and let everybody know what's on your mind. Okay, so we are at episode 54. This is going to be splitting 201. It's not going to be too much more advanced than like a 101 level type of discussion would be, but more just filling in information, a couple of gaps from before and so forth. First thing I wanted to do was I wanted to thank everyone for the donations. Like, so through my hosting provider, which is Red Circle, there's a link to make donations. I would love to be able to receive a donation, get the contact information for whoever made the donation, and then be able to email and say, hey, thank you, I appreciate that. You know, be able to offer thanks in some way. I wanted to let all of you know that if you make a donation and you don't hear from me, it's not me being rude or ungrateful or unappreciative. They genuinely just don't share the information with me. So I wanted to make sure that you all knew that. I mentioned it in the Discord room as well, but I wanted to make sure I said it here. There is another award that I wanted to make sure you all knew about. So of all the podcasts that were selected, they were down selected to 200 finalist podcasts. And I wanted to let all of you know that you received the award for the Most Attractive Podcast Listeners Award. Yeah. Well, I've known how beautiful you all are for years, but it's great to finally have that formal recognition that you deserve. So congratulations to all of you, and thank you for listening. Okay, so I have listened to the feedback over the years, and one thing that's come up a few times is folks have said, hey, you know, I was listening to this episode, and I didn't really understand what these words meant. There was some terminology that was used, some talking points I didn't really understand. And I think in my mind, I had this vision of everybody kind of starting with episode zero and just kind of rolling through one, two, three, you know, all the way sequentially up to the current episodes, you know, where we are now. And then it kind of dawned on me that a lot of people are actually just reading a topic and saying, hey, I'm going to go learn about that. And so they may not necessarily be doing things in order. So I decided to kind of make a little bit of adjustment to how I handle a lot of topics. I think, you know, it never hurts to reinforce concepts and ideas that you've had some exposure to in the past, but maybe you haven't worked with in a while. So I think what I'm going to try to do is incorporate about maybe like 20 to 30% of a discussion is going to be more review, where we're kind of just refreshing things to make sure that everybody is kind of level set and we got a good baseline to start from. And then we'll dive a little deeper into the content, kind of the meat and potatoes. So to kick things off with splitting, how and when and if you do splits, it's not a binary thing, right? It's not a yes or a no, a one or a zero. It's not a date thing where we say, okay, everyone, it's May 1st. You have 48 hours to do all your splits. One thing that absolutely drives me nuts is all of the kind of pro beekeepers out there who give information that's 100% accurate for where they're standing, you know, in that video. It's 100% accurate for their apiary, their geographical area. It's not accurate necessarily for about 99% of the people who are listening or watching these videos. I mean, yes, there are definitely some rules that are going to apply to beekeeping, you know, everywhere. There are some things that will always work in places that have a similar climate. However, generically saying, you know, hey, this is all you have to do to accomplish X task, I think it's a little bit irresponsible unless it comes with a detailed explanation of the geographic risks associated with it. As an example, I can probably do splits year-round if I live in southern Florida. If I'm down around like Marco Island or Miami or the Keys or something like that, I can probably do splits year-round. I'm probably going to have to do some supplemental feeding in there somewhere, I'm pretty sure. But if I created a video showing everyone just how easy January splits are and how there's nothing to it, you know, I think a beekeeper living in, say, you know, Montana might say, well, hey, wait a minute, it's minus 15 outside. I can't do a split when it's minus 15. And they would be right. Well, now this is certainly an extreme example, but it's a pretty obvious one. I mean, most examples that I could come up with aren't as obvious. They're not so blatantly, you know, in your face like, whoa, hold on, that's not right. But the one that I see a lot of videos on lately is regarding the walk-away split. So I want to make sure that we bring that up early. I'm going to talk about that here today. That's one of the things that really drove this episode is some of my frustration over the walk-away split. So we're going to talk about that today. So let's go ahead and do some review for the folks who are new or they're just starting out in beekeeping or they're kind of moving around the episodes. Or if you're somebody who's like me, who you can like listen to an episode one day and then 3 days later, completely forget it. So that's part of the beauty of the aging process. But hey, on the bright side, I don't hold grudges anymore, right? I mean, I want to. Yeah, I'd like to be able to, but I just can't. Anyway, why would we even be talking about splitting in the first place? I mean, why isn't it sort of like a lot of other things where it's like, yeah, if you want to, you can. If you don't, you don't, whatever. There's a lot of complexities to it. There's a lot of reasons for it. So I think if you're going to talk about splitting, you should also be talking about swarming. So splitting and swarming, they very much go hand in hand. Swarming is nature's way of splitting. But that splitting is strictly based on their space or wherever is their hive. It is now at capacity. So whether it's a tree or whether it's a man-made object that has become a location for a beehive. I actually talked to a gentleman just yesterday who mentioned like an old cable spool. And I guess the center of the cable spool is now a beehive. So man-made or not, when they reach capacity, they're going to initiate a split via the swarm. So without beekeeper management, some splitting is going down one way or another sooner or later. So let's define a split. So we just talked about nature's split, right? That's the swarm. Your split is basically dividing a colony into two or more new colonies. So this leads us into some other questions around kind of the basics of splitting. So why would we not just let it happen? You know, I've mentioned this person before, good buddy of mine out in Nebraska. Him and his wife, they love honey. They've got Flow Hive. They don't really want, they like the beekeeping. It's neat. It's kind of cool, right? Having the bees around and being able to talk about it. But they're just not diehard beekeepers. They don't want to expand. They don't want 20 or 30 colonies. They just really enjoy going out, cracking open the Flow Hive and getting some fresh honey. And I know that, you know, we haven't spoken in a while, but last time I talked to him, you know, he's getting at least one or two swarms every spring. The colony swarms, half of them leave. And they're still getting enough honey for themselves. The colony is still able to overwinter, and they're perfectly happy. But what are the repercussions of that, let's say, for someone, you know, like him and his wife? So if you were trying to raise a lot of bees, you were trying to create new colonies, you were trying to grow the apiary, you wanted to have a really big honey harvest, you're taking a massive hit. You've just lost potentially tens or thousands of bees in that swarm. Those are productive bees that are no longer going to be a part of your colony. Just out the door. Additionally, if you like your queen, she's obviously at least doing well enough to get you to the point where the colony can swarm, so she must be effective in at least some aspects of doing her job as a queen. Well, she's gone. She's out. Now you're relying on the new virgin queen who takes over to hopefully be as good or better than her. But with that loss, like I said, this is going to impact the overall production of the hive. So typically what I've kind of seen in my area, and every area is going to be a little bit different, right? So I don't want you to think that this is going to be kind of gospel for wherever you live. But I'm going to make up some numbers here. Let's say you have a colony that swarms, and then the colony left behind is able to continue operations. They put away enough honey to get them through our summer. They get enough of a fall flow. They make it through the winter. And, you know, God willing, they're thriving next spring. Typically, if I have one that swarms, you can take a tiny little bit of honey and it still is okay. Or you can just take some more if you want to supplemental feed them. But it is significantly different how much they will store away and how much more productive the colony would be. Like I mentioned in that example a second ago, you would probably see twice the production of honey if you were able to expand the hive, add more space, and then instead of all of those bees leaving and establishing a new colony, you have all of that hard work taking place right there inside the one colony. Now, where I am, if I have a swarm and they actually succeed and they leave and I don't catch them, the chances of that colony surviving are really, really low because of the fact that, you know, swarm season, which again is kind of like right about now. Yes, we can get some in late March, but usually it's kind of like that early to mid-April all the way through like mid-May. By the time they've swarmed and now they're in their new location, there's only like about 4 to 6 weeks of flow left and it's over. And that is not a lot of time to basically start from scratch. So a swarm where I am is kind of a death sentence for the leaving colony. So when you think about the options that you have, you can be like my buddy who's like, don't care, I'm not worried about it. And, you know, just take care of the bees, treat them and let them do their thing. Or you can say, hey, look, I really want to grow my apiary. That's kind of the beginning of the thing. You kind of have to define what your goals are as a beekeeper. My buddy's goals are crystal clear. I want some honey. Don't care about the rest. They're able to get honey. Bees are doing okay. That works. But if you want to grow your apiary and you want to make splits and you want to increase the, you know, the overall productivity of your apiary, well, you're probably going to need to expand. So how do you find, you know, you got to find ways to expand responsibly in ways that allow the source colonies to survive as well as the new ones. I think as a beekeeper, another kind of shift on goals, instead of having a goal to grow your apiary, I can tell you, myself included, particularly in those early years, I had one goal as a beekeeper. I just want to successfully overwinter my bees. If I can get a package or a nuke in like March, April, May timeframe, and I have bees alive and well in March, April, the year after that, like that's a win. And I still think that's a win. I mean, there's a lot of forces working against the bees pretty much all the time. So I think if you get a good, successful overwinter, that's a W right away. But when we're talking about growing your apiary, there's a lot of things that we need to look at. Are you going to grow by splits? Because if you're going to grow by splits, and there's nothing wrong with that, you can take a single colony, just divide them up, and basically you have two from one. That's one way of doing things. But if aggressive growth is what you're looking for, you say, look, I've got five colonies now, I want to get to 50. You're not going to just do splits after splits after splits all over the place, right? That's not going to be an efficient way to use the resources that you have. This is where you're going to start getting into the idea of maybe growing your own queens, doing some queen rearing, you know, grafting of young larvae. And there's a lot of different techniques. And as I was thinking about this and going through these notes today and figuring out all the things I wanted to cover, I've decided I'm actually going to do an episode in one of the next two. I think it's going to be 55 or 56. We're going to talk about methods of queen rearing, and we'll go from kind of simple, basic, all the way up to some slightly more advanced things. So that if you said, look, I've got five or six colonies and I want to get to 20 by the end of the season, we'll talk about how you can do that without having to go and spend $35 or $40 per queen. You know, we're going to show you how to do it, just leveraging the resources you have inside the apiary. So that is an upcoming episode. But the other thing to discuss, and again, we're going to dive into the specific types of splits in a minute, but thinking about it from what's economically feasible, what makes the most sense, what's in line with your goals. So that's the most important thing. Don't let somebody talk you into doing something that is not in alignment with what your overall goals and objectives are as a beekeeper. So you go to the bee club and they're like, oh, you have to split. If you don't split, they're going to swarm. I've literally heard people say that. If you don't split, they're going to swarm. Well, that's not true. Like if you give them space, if they don't have swarm cells, they can't swarm without a swarm. They will not just leave and be like, hope it all works out when we get there without a queen. Right? That doesn't happen that way. If you don't want to split, then don't split. But another option to look at is maybe you're just trying to relieve some pressure on the colony, some of that spring pressure, some of that impulse, that urge to swarm. Maybe instead of thinking about a split, maybe you take a couple of frames from a productive hive and move them into like a nuke. And now you're reducing that primary colony's urge to swarm while simultaneously creating a little source of revenue, right? Let's say you have two brood frames, they got a couple queen cells on them. You take those, you throw them into a nuke. You know, you give it a couple of weeks to get things moving along, get that queen mated. You know, she's going to come back, she'll ramp up that colony. Next thing you know, you got a full-fledged nuke in a couple of weeks, a few weeks, and you're, you know, $175, $200. I mean, now the source colony that you bought last year just paid for itself with the money from that nuke. So you're playing with house money now, right? It's free. Yeah, it's kind of a gambling reference because if you're a beekeeper, you're pretty much a gambler. I mean, if you're betting on something where there's about an 80% chance of failure in the first year, like a beekeeper in beekeeping, you're kind of a gambler. So there's an 800 number for you.
When I was little, my grandmother had bird feeders and a bird bath in her backyard. Some of my favorite memories growing up were listening to her tell me everything she knew about the feathered friends that visited her yard daily. How amazing would it have been for us to be able to capture images and videos of that experience and to be able to share them with others? Well, if you're ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level, FeatherSnap makes Wi-Fi enabled smart bird feeders that blend the best of technology and nature. Get a high-def glimpse of your feathered friends with a top-of-the-line camera so every visitor can be seen with clarity and detail. A unique dual-feeder bin helps attract more species, and built-in solar panels keep your camera's battery going strong. FeatherSnap's mobile app creates a truly immersive experience, allowing you to collect and organize your favorite pics and videos and earn badges along the way. Best of all, FeatherSnap offers expert-trained AI identification of more than 275 North American species thanks to their in-house ornithologist. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com.
As most of you know, I'm a big fan of the outdoors, and most of my time is dedicated to beekeeping and gardening-related discussions. But you probably did not know that one of my responsibilities as a kid was caring for our houseplants. Yes, part of my $5 a week allowance went towards making sure all of the houseplants were healthy and happy. We used to have shamrocks, Christmas cactus, philodendron, and more. Which leads us to today's podcast sponsor, and a special thanks to Palm Street. Palm Street is the best live shopping app for the plant lover community. You can buy and sell rare plants, crystals, ceramics, and other unique goods. Connect with trusted plant sellers and nurseries that sell nationwide. Shop 24/7 and with live human customer support. What I love most about Palm Street is joining a live stream where sellers walk through all the details and characteristics of the plants they're offering. You can get live answers to your questions and see what questions others have asked as well. It's such a great way to engage for buyers and sellers. And as a special offer, new users will receive $5 app credit, 10% off their first order, and up to $6 off shipping for 3 orders. Palm Street, available on Google Play or the App Store.
Okay, so let's talk about the types of splits. I'm going to go ahead and do this from my least favorite all the way up to what I would say would be the most optimal scenario. The walkaway split. The walkaway split is the worst kind because of how long it takes to, one, get a new queen made, and two, because of how long it takes to replace the workers from when that split occurs to when the first replacement bee is born. Now, I've talked about these numbers quite a bit in the past, but we're going to run through it again because, you know, like I said, it never hurts to reinforce some of these things. So you have a large colony. And you literally just divide everything up in half and you walk away, okay? You need to make sure that you've divided up the resources as evenly as you can, but you really need to make sure that you have young larvae in both of these colonies because you need to make sure that they have a good young larva to make a new queen from. So here we are now. You make the split and you're in day one, but right away, the colony is, they're going to realize fairly soon that they're queenless, right? They're going to start missing the queen pheromone, and they're going to look around and be moving through the colony, and they're going to get a little bit, you'll hear a little bit of a rumble sometimes, a little bit of a growl from the colony when they recognize that the queen's not there. Once they have accepted the fact that she isn't there, it's time for an emergency cell. So they may not even start working on that till the next day, but let's just assume that they're on the ball right away. And day one, they start making a new queen cell, a new emergency queen cell from one of those young larvae. 16 days later, you get a virgin queen born, roughly about a week after that, to give her time to go through the whole hive, make sure there's no other queens in there anywhere, get rid of them if there are. Then she goes out, she does her mating flight, she comes back, and she's ready to start laying eggs. So now we're 23 days in when she lays her first egg, and it's 21 days later before the first worker is born. So we're at 44 days. Now, the average life expectancy of a honeybee in the summertime, depending on who you talk to, is going to put it somewhere between 45 and 60 days, roughly in there. So let's just say 50 days. So basically, a lot of the bees that were there when that queen cell was first being created, a lot of those bees are gone. If you didn't have a whole lot of brood getting ready to emerge, you're in a tough spot. 44 days, and it's not like it's 44 days in July or August or something. You know, like for me, June, July, August, there's just not much going on. Things have tapered down. It's a dearth. There's not a lot of activity. The bees are kind of hanging out, killing time, waiting for something to pop up that they can eat or for me to fill my feeders. But 44 days in April and May, like, this is the most important time of the year. The flow is on. There's nectar everywhere. Like, everything is going great. And you have no new bees being created. That means there's no new foragers, right? Even when those workers are starting to be born, you still have to give them time to then serve as nurse bees themselves, to raise the next generation, to then go out and become the foragers so that they can graduate up, right? They're going to be forced into other roles quicker because most of the foragers are probably dead. So yeah, it throws a whole lot of stress into everything. Now, again, if it was a large enough colony, they'll make it work. They'll figure it out. But losing basically a month and a half at the peak time of year is really, really, really disruptive. Now, the reason that I say that this is the absolute worst kind is I'm basing that off of where I am and where I live. And like I kind of mentioned earlier, right? If I do a walkaway split at my house right now, May 1st, that colony is going to die. Now, there is a possibility that if I feed them enough, yes, they can maybe have enough bees during that 44-day period where no new bees were being created. They might maybe be able to make it if I feed the heck out of them from June, 14th or 15th for the next 2 months until hopefully a fall flow kicks in. But I'm locked in 100%. I'm feeding them all summer by doing that walk-away split. Now, there are lots of places all over the world where you do the walk away, yeah, you lose 45 days, but your nectar flow is 120 or 150 days long, so it doesn't matter. Something like that, right? So if you're in those areas, it's not as big of an issue, but it drives me bonkers when I see people that are like, oh yeah, walk away split, this is all you got to do, yay. No, it is absolutely the worst. Now, let's go to the next one and talk about a swarm cell split. With a swarm cell, it's easy for me to say, with a swarm cell split, you're basically you're in that swarm mode, right? The colony has created swarm cells. They are making plans to swarm. And the goal here is it's one of two ways that this has been initiated. One, it was your colony that created a swarm cell because they want to swarm. You're going to take immediate action on that and create a split. Or two, you have a beekeeper who was actually raising queens, and they gave you or sold you a queen cell that you're putting into a split that you're going to do yourself. The end goal was basically the same. You're going to move resources from one colony to a new colony. There will either be a swarm cell or multiple swarm cells on those frames going into the new colony, or you will do the split with whatever resources you decide, and then you will take the purchased swarm cell and place that into the colony yourself. A couple of different ways that can go down. But this is still a pretty good way of doing things because typically when you do that, your swarm cell is usually probably like 11 or 12, maybe 13 days old. So you're moving things over right before that new queen is going to emerge. So at least you've cut that time down. Yeah, you still have 4 weeks. Like once she's born, you still have 4 weeks before she goes out, gets mated, returns, lays her eggs, and you get your first workers. But at least you cut 2 weeks off of that timeline. You still have the same challenges, right? You've still lost a month at the peak time of year, but it's better than losing 6 weeks. Now, the next thing you can do is a virgin queen. Now, the only way that I've seen this actually done, I have not done it myself, but I have seen people that have done a lot of their own queen rearing through whatever method they use, and they put a queen cage on the bottom of the queen cell, and they're giving those out or selling them. And sometimes the queen actually emerges from the cell before she has been installed into a colony. In that case, you still kind of want to be a little bit careful. If you have a queenless colony and they've been queenless for a little while and you introduce a virgin queen, they're probably going to be okay with her. The problem is that virgin queen, she's not mated, so she doesn't have that really, really strong queen pheromone. A good laying queen, her pheromone is going to just draw those bees to her and they're just going to be locked on. But a virgin queen just doesn't have that yet. So I've never actually introduced a virgin queen. I would really recommend that if you had that situation, and like I said, they're typically in a queen cage that is around the cell, put that whole thing up at the top on the top frames and let the bees come up and check her out. And if it seems like they're really interested in her, then you can probably direct release and it's going to be okay. If they seem like they're acting aggressively towards her around that cage, you're probably going to need to put her into a queen cage, put her in there for a couple of days, and let them just gradually decide they're going to set her free. And hopefully they will allow that to happen. Like I said, I've seen stranger things have happened. Sometimes they just kill her because she just doesn't seem strong enough or whatever their reasoning is behind it. But I don't do a virgin queen introduction, just not my thing, but I wouldn't be opposed to trying it, particularly if that was all that I had. The next option, probably the most popular, is the mated queen. This is where you can do it a couple different ways. One of them might be you go to a reputable apiary near you, you buy a mated queen, you order one online, somebody will mail it to you, or you have your own mating nucs established and you have your own queen rearing plan in place and you're taking a mated queen from that mating nuc that you have. And if you're not sure what a mating nuc is, they can be done a lot of different ways. You can use just about anything to become or make into a mating nuc. But if you check out our YouTube page, it's just at Beekeeping for Newbies on YouTube, there's a couple of videos in there. One of them is specifically what the mini mating nuc is that I use. It's a small styrofoam container. It's got three little frames in it. I put some queen pheromone in there, and I drop a queen cell in that. The queen pheromone strip helps to keep the bees in there that I put in there because they think they have a queen. She emerges from the queen cell, looks around, heads out, gets mated, comes back. You come back a week or so later, you see eggs laid all over the place, and you've got a mated queen ready to go. Now, with the mated queen, if you're taking her to a queenless colony, they have been queenless for at least a day or two, they will typically accept her direct release because she is a mated queen. She's big, full, plump, and her pheromones are at their max. They will typically invite her right in and say, thank you, where have you been? Come on in, get to work. But that is actually a laying queen, not just a mated queen. Now, the mated queen is one that was mated somewhere, whether it's your own yard or someone else's, placed into a cage where she was not able to mate for 8 to 10 hours or so. And now she's still a very viable queen. She's still absolutely great to introduce to a new colony. But again, making sure that they are already an existing queenless colony. I mean, I've literally seen, I haven't done this part myself, but I have seen people like Michael Palmer and others take a, you know, laying queen from one colony, take her out and put her into another colony that was recently made queenless, and they just, you know, business as usual. That always, because I don't have a lot of resources, you know, for me, that always freaked me out. I was like, oh man, what if I do this? I direct released a queen once. It was a Saskatraz queen, and they balled her and killed her, and I was like, oh, come on. But anyway, it's a whole separate story. So like I said, you got the laying queen is your ideal way to go. Mated queen being kind of the, you know, the number two behind that. And what you can do too is if you have a mated queen that was in a cage or in a carrier or somehow got to you, but she had an extended period where she was no longer laying any eggs, you can take some hardware cloth, bend it into a cage, probably maybe like about 6x8, 6x6, something like that, little cage, and put that over a section of comb that has been drawn. It's drawn comb with open cells. You can put the queen inside that with a couple of attendant workers and just push that little piece of hardware cloth in and make a cage. I think they call it a push-in cage. And you'll just push that in. That gives her the ability to move across the frame, start laying again in that area that you've designated for her. She's got some workers keeping an eye on things and taking care of her. And then she can really kind of get that pheromone boost and start laying again. It gives time for the rest of the colony to get to know her. So that's kind of another trick you can use as well if you want to give her a chance to start laying again before you introduce her. Okay, so the next question is, how many splits can I make from a single hive? So I'm going to give you the standard answer for that one, and that's going to be that, you know, anything in beekeeping, right, that depends. I would say that not all growth is good growth. Years ago, I remember I had a larger colony, very, very productive, a little bit on the aggressive side, but they would explode in the spring. I turned one colony into five. So I literally broke the entire colony down into four brand new nucs and left behind the original colony. Even with conditions being perfect at the start of all the splits and everything going well when I did all of this, only three of them actually made it to the summer. And only two of the three were able to overwinter. And they had great genetics. They came from genetics of a queen that had overwintered before. In hindsight, I would have been better off to just split the one colony into two and make two really, you know, good, strong colonies than to do what I did. Are there things I could have done differently? Could I maybe have fed them more? Could I have maybe done a better job and maybe all of them would have made it? Maybe. There's a lot of variables in beekeeping. But I still think that that was a little bit too much, right? But you get that euphoria. You get that, oh, it's the springtime, man. It's exciting. The spring, like we talked about, you know, in the podcast as well as in the Discord room, you know, the spring is a forgiving time of year. You can get away with some mistakes. You can get away with things. You can do cool things. And you're like, oh my gosh, look at this. And the hives, the colonies, they just keep cranking on through. They're like, yeah, hooray, this is great. And then all of a sudden something changes, whether it's a dearth or whether there's some scarcity or maybe there's a break in what things are in bloom. So you have kind of a temporary lack of some resources. Then you have issues with robbing and you have other things that can kick in and can happen. There's always some reason why you have to be on your toes. But it's such an exciting time in the spring that you get caught up in it. And next thing you know, you're splitting like a maniac. But my recommendation is early on, right? You're a first year, maybe second year beekeeper. If you're going to split, just do one off the primary. Now, which way you decide to do it, that's going to have to be, kind of up to you. I mean, if you want to do, one of the methods that we just kind of discussed, I recommend either making your own queens, getting a mated queen, mating your own queens, doing something that doesn't result in a massive disruption to when you get new replacement bees and when you're getting your new queen and all of that. But like I mentioned earlier, you could always just take a couple of frames, make a nuke, sell the nuke, make a smaller colony, essentially have a separate colony with a queen laying eggs that you can use to boost your primary colony, right? But whatever you want to do, just keep it simple. Don't destroy all of the resources of your primary source colony. So one subject that came up in the Discord room today that I think I should probably bring this up, and this is not at all to pick on the person who did this. I think it's a great learning opportunity for all of us. I think it was a gutsy move, and it's not something that that I would do with just a few more years under my belt, but definitely something that I would probably have done, in my earlier years, and it's a pretty high risk. Now, this person found enough swarm cells to create two splits from a source colony. So they're starting with one and they're ending with three. The source colony, it was a new colony this year. I can't remember. I'd have to go back and look if it was a nuke or package bees, but it is a first year colony. So taking a first year colony and now splitting it, and now you have three. So this kind of leads me back to the earlier questions and things that we ask when we're doing an inspection. If you see a swarm cell, the question has to be, why does the colony want to swarm? From there, you have to discuss and kind of differentiate between what you consider usable space and what the hive and the bees consider usable space. In fact, I was just texting somebody about that this evening, talking about getting bees to move up into a honey super because they're packed down below, but not into the honey super. We see it. We see the space, and they don't always see that. One thing that happens, all the time, you can have a 10-frame hive, completely loaded with frames, put some bees in it. They'll draw up like 5 to 6 of them. And you're thinking, well, cool, everything's fine. I don't need to give them more space. They're not going to swarm or anything because I'm only using 55% or so of the space. And I know that from what everybody tells me, I don't need to add more space until they're at 70%. And then next thing you know, you get a little sneak swarm on and they're swarming and you're trying to figure out what's going on. You open everything up. You got 3 empty frames on the far left, 2 empty frames on the far right. They're using everything in the middle and there's swarm cells all over it. So you see 45% available space and the bees see 0. And that goes back to another reason why those kind of weekly inspections are so critical. Because if you see those swarm cells, okay, they definitely believe that they're out of space. And it's so weird. I don't know what it is, but it seems like, I'm always looking for the queen cup. And I look around and I say, okay, queen cups are on these frames. It just seems like it goes from queen cup to capped queen cell so fast. But you definitely got to be aggressive with it. So we talked about a lot of things here today. And I feel like, again, it's one of those things where it's a lot of information and it really, really does well when you can see it, actual video of these things going on and have some more visual components to that. So we're working on that. That's a work in progress, but hopefully this has been a good supplement to the previous discussions we've had around splitting. Oh, you know what? I do have one go back. Hold on. Oh, wait a second. It was brought up. Where did it go? Well, I gotta make sure I cover this here. Okay, so Pops in the podcast, or in the, it was brought up in the Discord room, not the podcast. So I made a comment to everybody saying, hey, we're going to do some recording. If there's anything you want to talk about, make sure I cover about splitting, let me know. And Pops said, how about the Taranov splitting? T-A-R-A-N-O-V. So I did a little bit of research on it. Russian guy, something or other, Taranov is his last name. This is an approach to splitting. I kind of read through it and took a skim of the article, and I can see that it's probably not necessarily the best fit for me. But if you have a chance to look it up, it's T-A-R-A-N-O-V split, Taranov split. Essentially what's happening is you're trying to mimic a swarm by doing a little bit of some stuff with a couple of hives. And as I looked through it, the one thing that I thought was interesting was where they kind of were walking through everything and explaining the process and how it's done. Again, this process of mimicking the swarm. What was kind of cool about it is you're actually getting the entire colony to move from point A to point B. Point B could potentially be a completely different hive setup. So maybe you're in a all deep colony and you need to move them into all mediums. And you can't just pull deep frames and stick them into medium hive bodies, right? This is a scenario where I think this could actually be really, really effective. And like I said, it's neat. Scientifically, I think that it is a neat way of doing things. But like I mentioned in the Discord room, it says this usually takes 1 to 2 hours to complete. That's where I kind of tapped out on that, because my relaxing time with the bees is just kind of sitting there in a chair, drinking a cup of coffee, watching them come in and out. You know, that's the kind of thing I like to do. When the hives are open and there's bees all over the place, like it's like, okay, come on, let's go. Let's get it going. Let's keep things moving. Let's get on to the next one. So probably not the best fit for me, but I wanted to make sure I at least brought that up for you all to take a look at and check out. I feel like there's like 400 or 500 more things I'd like to talk about. It's one of these subjects you can just keep going on and on and on about. So look, shoot me an email, jeff@beekeepingfornewbies.com. Jump in the Discord room. Tell me what I missed. Tell me what we need to come back on and revisit. Because like I said, this isn't even like, you know, it's 201, but it's not even 201. It's just more of the same stuff and trying to expand on it some more and give a little bit more detail. There's nothing difficult about what we're talking about. But I have a Bee Buzz episode coming up. I've got a lot of notes for that. I'm trying to look here. We're on episode 54 now. I have episode 55 is going to be about queens, queen rearing, making your own queens. And then I have another episode 56. I just started putting some notes together for that today. What we're going to do on episode 56 is I was listening to some early episodes back, like, you know, the early, like the very beginning. And there's just some audio quality stuff. I can't believe there are still people listening today. I went back and listened to that. I'm like, how did you even stay on the channel listening to this? But the audio quality was really crappy. So I'm going back and I'm fixing a lot of the audio and amplifying things and getting it to where it's just normalized and semi-professional. But I noticed episode 7 was referencing hive placement. And when I played it back, I think I made a brief mention of like, oh, I generally kind of put mine facing this direction. They seem to respond pretty well to that. And that was kind of the end of it. And I know that over different episodes, I've talked about 4x4s and putting them on center blocks and pallets and other things. But unless I can find something in the next couple of episodes I'm reviewing that definitively addresses and covers a lot of the specifics around hive placement, that's what I have tentatively teed up for episode 56. I'm going to look around a little bit more and make sure. I could have sworn that I covered it. I don't think I did based on what I'm seeing so far. But like I said, shoot me an email, jump in the Discord room. Let me know, you know, what we can tackle next for you. Lots of episodes teed up. Thank you all so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate it. And I enjoy hearing from you. And have a blessed day. Take care, everybody.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.